Alright, time for another DoNotGuide.com video presentation. Alright, Modern Mystic again on the subject of cash and money, and yeah, that's pretty important, kind of a big subject. Lots of people would like to have the secrets to the system, so it's a big subject. I'd say it's not as complicated as it all seems, in the sense you can sort of understand what mechanisms are being used to create what you see in the environment. And the real key difference is the difference between what a common person can do in the economy and what somebody who's manipulating or taking advantage of the system can do. And that's really the part that has something to do with creating depressions and all of that kind of crap. And so the simple system is just barter, right? That's all human beings can really do is barter. You know, everybody's got, you go to work, you make some money, you buy some stuff, you have stuff, you can barter with your stuff. Now, the fact is that the real distinction between rich people and poor people is how well they can convert what they own into capital, and that's capitalism, is how well can you capitalize your ownership and make it do more work for you, make it earn you a living. All right, and that's all there is. Okay, poor people can't capitalize their ownership, rich people can. Okay, and there's only one behavior that is the danger in the system. There's only really one event that takes place that causes that is the thing that's broken. If they fix the one thing, then the system isn't broken anymore. It won't crash, it won't break, it'll just bend, it'll look funny sometimes, but it won't be a catastrophe. Essentially one event. All right, so the mystic in this video, he calls everybody who doesn't believe what he believes an idiot. And he basically is saying the whole system is unregulated. The banks lend as much money as they want. They just create digits anytime. Somebody just walks in and says, give me some digits. They just give them some digits. They just make the person rich if they want to make them rich. They make them poor if they want to make them poor. Some kind of bullshit. I mean, just idiotic in the sense he's calling other people idiots when he's basically saying, oh, in spite of all the regulations and all the systems in place, it's an unregulated system. It isn't, okay? It's not regulated well, but it's regulated, and it's just stupid to say otherwise. All right, so you have commodities in the world. You can understand. You can own some stuff. You can own corn. You can own wheat. You can own oil, let's say. Or you can own American dollars. Oh, I have to put the other screen on. All right, so I'll do my talking first. Giving you the paraphrase of the mystic's argument. He's basically just saying it's unregulated and it's all just digits made up by banks. And they're not made up by the banks, and that's just bullshit. All right, so you have all these other commodities out here. Paintings, stocks, bonds, all kinds of things you could own. Buildings, or you could own cash. Okay, so cash is just a commodity. All right, that's all. It's just like all the other, we'll put it next to it so you can see the difference. Okay, this is cash, or make it solid. Okay, it's like every other commodity. It's just that it's really convenient, okay? It's a commodity, it's not like a silo of wheat, okay? It's not a sheep, it's not a cow, it's not a building. You can carry it around with you. It's a piece of paper that basically says by the government, I'll guarantee you, look, here's $1. You want a dollar's worth of gold? I'll give you a dollar's worth of gold. You want a dollar's worth of oil? I'll give you a dollar's worth of oil. So there's $2 trillion worth of this stuff, right? It's not a tiny amount, really, when you think about the world economy. $2 trillion, $2.3 trillion right now. Now, it's a little bit high. It should be, you know, if it was going, if it wasn't taking advantage of the fact that it became a world economy and there's deflation in the world because wages went way down, okay, which was very advantageous to the market environment in the sense that prices were deflating rather than inflating because of the huge costs, labor costs that were destroyed. So the cost of doing business went way down. And so they were able to print a little extra of this stuff. But again, this is a tiny number, $2 trillion. It's a tiny number. It's 1 year's salary for the government, so to speak. That's how much money they take in 1 year. And it's less than how much money they take in taxes in one single year. Not that much, okay, of real value in the whole world economy. Hundreds of years of the Industrial Revolution. The world is made out of trillions upon trillions of dollars worth of buildings and infrastructure and technology and tools and cable wires and satellites. We have a ton of stuff worth, you know, thousands of times more than that $2 trillion in cash. Tiny amount. All right, well, anyway. It's like there's less cash than there is gold, you know. There's less, it's like the smallest amount of something in the commodity market. All right, but anyway, so it just exists as a piece of paper guaranteed by the government that says, look, it's anything you want. I don't care what you want. I'll give it to you. You go to the federal government with your $2 bill, all right, and it can give you $2 of anything you want. Just tell it what you want, it'll give it to you, because it has the $2 trillion in assets. The government owns $2 trillion, so it's no problem. Now, I don't even think it has that much in Fort Knox anymore, but it doesn't really make any difference. All right, so it's just a commodity. It's just something on the sheet, and it's a controlled commodity. That is, you don't make an infinite amount of it. So as long as the government doesn't print more of this stuff, okay, it stays the same value as all this other stuff. It stays consistent. Now, any one of these things can spike at some time, right? Oil prices went from $25 to $125, okay? It's a huge increase in oil prices. So everybody who owned oil got really rich, you know, cash, more cash. You could go to the government with your bucket of oil and get more dollar bills for it. And everybody else got poorer relative to that. Okay, but this is the commodity that everything is averaged out into. So you're really watching where does your commodity go relative to the cash, and that's the thing that's important if you're a commodity holder, is I want to make money. All right, so now we have something called a bank. Okay, now banks originally were just rich people, right? Rockefeller would have a whole bunch of, you know, acquired assets. He owns a bunch of stuff. And he basically just says, okay, I'll give you the power of my stuff. So whenever I need cash, okay, Rockefeller just says, I will mortgage what I have for cash and I give you the cash. Okay, I give you the value. All right, so it just becomes, he's capable of sending out the value that he owns in cash. He gets it denominated into cash. So he owns some wheat, he owns some corn, he owns some oil, and lots of oil he owned, okay? He just converts the oil into cash, okay? Simply goes to a bank, another rich person, and just says, who has cash, who's got a lot of cash on hand, and says, give me the cash, I'll give you the ownership of the oil, you know, the deed to the oil. Then I'm going to take the cash and I'm going to lend it to somebody. All right. I mean, it's a little hard to follow. There's three steps here, but it's not that complicated. It's pretty ABC. All right. You could say before he does this, he converts all his assets into cash. So you could say he owns $1 trillion worth of oil and he sells half of it on the market and gets the cash. And now he starts with, you know, $500 billion worth of cash money that he can lend. And he starts lending it. And so he lends it by having people put in collateral worth, say, 125% of the value of what he's going to give out. So he gives out, you know, 100, and he takes in as collateral deeds, okay, worth at least 125. So he's covered. So if this guy can't pay back the money, he's got profit already. He's already made a profit because he'll just resell the house, right? So that's basically what a house mortgage is. You put in an amount. Your down payment is essentially the extra 25%, at least it was in the old days. He gives you the money, okay? So, and again, it's sort of well collateralized. It's, you know, he can't really lose in a rational market. He's not going to lose anything unless this value of the house goes way down. He's kind of guaranteed a profit, not just a protection against loss. He's kind of guaranteed a profit, and it really depends on how much profit he's going to make. Can he make a line this way Or can the guy fail on the loan, that is, pay him interest for, say, half the value of the loan, and then crash on the loan, and he gets to keep the full value of the house. So he gets 150, 160%. So this is what people used to do in the 20s, right before the big crash, is they sold cars. All the cars, all the Model A's were bought on time. All people's furniture was bought on time. Everybody bought everything they owned on time. So they were way overspending in terms of they had no way to really pay it back. And the fact was is that, you know, the guy selling the crap on time, if, okay, something happens where nobody can pay you back, you don't have deeds. You have a bunch of crap. You have a bunch of used cars. And you have, you know, they're all broken, and you have a bunch of used furniture you can't sell. So that's why there was a depression, is because, well, they all had to go bankrupt because there was no way to fix that. There was really no protection. If you let somebody buy their furniture on time, you just own shitty furniture. Furniture that was degrading in value, not increasing. Where if you own a house, the tendency was, because population increases, the value of the house just keeps going up. So it's a guaranteed winner, okay? You just can't lose by taking a house in as collateral, because the house in 5 years is going to be worth more than what you thought it was worth when you took it. And so you're gaining money not only because the house's value is going up, you know, you're getting paid interest from the moron who's going to pay twice as much for it in the end. He's going to pay 200% in the end, okay? So it just depends on, you know, you're obviously going to do a lot better than inflation. So, you know, cash might be going down in value versus the commodities every year. But the fact is, you're going to make a lot more. All right, so that's the banking system. And the fact is there was a point where they regulated in the 30s after the Great Depression. They put in some regulations because all the banks went bankrupt. And they have to stop banks from going bankrupt because then people can't get their deposits. So all the people who owned stuff, they went to work. They put their life savings in a bank, the bank goes bankrupt, and they're stuck with, hey, you lost everything of value you owned. So it was horrific. So they created FDIC insurance, and of course, I've already explained how that's a lie now, because they've insured way over-insured, way, 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 way over-insured, way beyond the capacity of the fund, okay, to pay out the money. So it's not insurance at all. It's absolute rubbish and meaningless. But anyway, they did create it. It did make sense for 50 years, and then they destroyed it in 2010. I mean, just absolutely destroyed it. Wiped it completely out as meaningful. It no longer means anything. There's no such thing. You think you're FDIC insured? It means absolutely nothing. No chance you are. Okay. All right. So what the system they created was the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve was basically just saying, if you're a bank and you have, you know, you're Rockefeller, and you start off with, you know, $500 million or whatever it is, and you're loaning your money out, you have what's called these cash reserves. You still have money in your vault. So you have a certain amount of money. So just in case a few of your transactions, your loans go bad, you can still pay out, okay? You're not stuck. You're not bankrupt, all right? But the problem, you know, you can pay your depositors back their money. So the depositors put money in, you can get it back. Now, there's a pretty famous case of what a savings and loan is. And it's basically the same kind of institution. It's just formalized a little bit differently. But the idea is that, you know, the value was in the houses being built. So the bank owned the future, the house being built. It already owned the house that was being built. And it just allowed people to, you know, borrow. So they bought the house, essentially, created the capital. And so people would put their money in and get some interest on their savings account, right? So that was the money they were using. Instead of being a Rockefeller and being rich, they were using other people's deposits, okay, to finance the construction. Now, obviously, all these deposits could want to get out, right? So the movie It's a Wonderful Life has a pretty good explanation of this, because the guy owns a little savings and loan. And the crisis comes, and the problem is everybody wants their deposit money. But it's not in the bank. It went to purchase the construction of the houses. So it's in the value of the houses. And the only way they can, the only way the bank can give you your deposit money back immediately is if they force foreclosure on all the people who haven't fully paid their house loans, or they have to sell the houses. You know, they have to force the loan to come due now, immediately. And so they have to bankrupt all the people that bought houses, you know, and steal and take their houses and sell them on the market to get the money. So the point is you got to wait for it. You got to wait till the system stabilizes and people pay their loans, and then I can pay your deposit. But I can't do it today because I don't have money in a vault somewhere. My money is in all of the houses. My money built the houses. I own the house. The bank owns the houses. It doesn't own cash. Okay, and so this is, goes back to the whole gold standard argument I made before, where, well, what do you want a bank to do, right? So if the federal government's going to do a project, do you really want the federal government to sit there and put, you know, it's going to take money from you in taxes. Do you really want it to spend, let's say, $100 billion on a Hoover Dam or something? Do you really want it to put, at the same time, $100 billion in a vault somewhere? That would be full reserve banking, okay, is the sense that you would have to have $100 billion to just sit in a vault for every $100 you spent. Now, that wouldn't make much sense. You couldn't, it wouldn't be very productive, right, to tax everybody 10% when you only need the 5% to do the real work. And the other 5% is just going in a vault. You don't need your money in a vault somewhere. That's not helping you any. All right. Okay, so I've already explained, reserve banking doesn't mean anything. You just don't want unreserved banking. You don't want negative reserve banking, okay? That's the last thing you want, is banks to lend money they don't have, in the sense that they can't. If something goes wrong, they have no capacity to float the boat, keep the boat afloat. So any irregularity, any bounce in the ocean waves, they have no reserve to be able to compensate for that, because they have, you know, so you don't want no reserve banking. So we've gone all the way down to like 5% now. 5% reserves. So you have to put 5% in here, okay, rather than 100%. All right. But this really isn't the critical problem. The reserves aren't the critical problem. It's what they've done to the reserve system that's the critical problem. All right, so anyway, so the fact is the banks have to have equity, all right, to be able to pay the people who want to get their money out of the bank, right? Somebody shows up and says, give me my money that, you know, give me my property that I hawked, okay? No, that's not even a good way to say it. Give me the money I deposited. And the bank has to be able to produce the cash, and so that would come out of these reserves. All right, so the bank is really a savings and loan, because it isn't just the bank's money, it's the depositor's money it's using to loan, okay, create the loans. All right, and it's all regulated down in what's called the Fed, okay? So the Fed, just the simple thing was, is the Fed, well, I guess I've got to, oh, it's backwards, sorry. Yeah, well, I don't know if it really matters, but yeah, I forgot this one's reversed. Yeah, that is weird, though. All right, well, I'll fix it. And such. And erase it. All right, so, oh, it's frozen. Okay, so yeah, now I'm really in trouble. Ugh, it's always something. Well, just so you can see, this is the way the board actually looks, but it's now frozen, which is bad. Alright, appears to be fixed. Splice this stuff together. Shouldn't be too big a problem. Anyway, so the Federal Reserve System. So it was invented as a way of regulating the banks. And what it basically is that the Federal Reserve is just a monitoring device. And what's monitored is what's in the vault. So every institution that wants to get into the banking business has to register, okay, with the Federal Reserve. And it basically just says, let's just see how much capital you have versus how much stuff you have loaned out. So it's just really saying, okay, if you've loaned out 100, you have to have in this account you know, at least 5% of that. So you have to have a 5. So for every 100 you've lent out, you have to have 5 in your reserves, your cash, your ability to pay out, your liquid portion, the portion that isn't, okay, some sort of collateral, a sheep or a dog or something. Okay, that stuff doesn't count only the good, the hard assets, what it considers cash. So that's how it starts, okay? And this number was 75% when it started, and this number just went steadily down over time because it really wasn't necessary that it be so big, okay? That for every dollar you loan, you have to have a dollar in cash in the vault. That was kind of inefficient. It was found that it's unnecessary, blah, 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 blah. All right, so all that's really doing is these reserve accounts are basically just saying a duplicate. Instead of keeping the cash in their vault, the cash is sort of understood to be held in the Federal Reserve. So this is Bank A's vault, this is Bank B's vault, this is Bank C's and Bank D's. So now every time this bank writes a check, okay, it gives you cash, but you have to convert it into real cash, okay, because we don't want to walk around with hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then, so you go to Bank A. Bank A gives you a check for whatever reason, okay, for $100,000. And you go to Bank B to cash it. The simple thing the Federal Reserve could do is this transaction. It could just take the money out of out of A's vault, because B is going to cash the check and put cash out. Okay, cash goes out here, okay, and so they put cash out. And now they need their money back, so they just take the money out of A's account and put it in B's vault. So now they just do a vault switch. So now this is happening with each check that's cashed. The Federal Reserve just does this. You know, it just does this thing where every time there's a transaction between a bank check is cashed, they just do the UO thing and they just fix it. So it's all regular. So Bank B is restored because it cashed the check. Okay, and it's restored. It gets its cash back from A, who wrote the check. So this just keeps the system running efficiently. And all of these accounts, you know, get to a certain level. Now, what they call the something interest, you know, the thing they use to decide what interest rates are is the lending rate for banks. See, sometimes the bank's reserve levels get too low, and so they borrow, you know, at a very low interest rate, essentially from the Federal Reserve, just saying, okay, let me slide, okay, and I'll pay a little interest penalty because I've gone below my reserves. Okay, I've gone below the 5% I'm supposed to have. Let me borrow the money from another bank at a standard interest rate of, you know, 1% because it's guaranteed that I'm going to pay it and blah, blah, blah. So it's a guaranteed kind of loan, low interest rate, a little bit of a penalty for going below your reserve level. So it's a kind of a sensible system, and it worked for decades as a sensible system. All right, so this is sort of how the cash went into the economy. So the mystic sort of mocks this argument I've made before, but I mean, this is really how it worked. So you know that money gets damaged, right? You know, all the time. So you go into the bank with a half torn or tape on the bill, all that damaged cash, this is how the cash would get put back into accounts and how much cash could be in the reserve accounts. This is one of the mechanisms, is the banks send all the broken cash to the Fed, okay? And the Fed puts the money into their account, the new dollars, so to speak. And so that means this is how new dollars get back to the bank, is based on how many old dollars the bank sent, you know, broken dollars the bank sent in. So that's part of the circulation. There's no shenanigans there. It's just a simple system of always refilling these accounts. Now, what the government can do, like I said, it has $2 trillion in cash. So sometimes it needs to buy something, a refrigerator or whatever. The government will just print the cash, okay, and give it to a bank and just essentially have the bank do the purchase. And it's just free money for the government gets its free refrigerator. You know, essentially, and just puts the cash into the reserve account of the purchaser. So the government tells a bank to just go buy a bond. This is how it happened. When the government wanted to print a little more cash, it just told one of the banks to buy a bond, all right, and the government will just put more newly printed money in your reserve account. So it paid for it with printed money, and that's how the $2 trillion goes up. Now, you know, like I said, it's a big number, $2 trillion, but it's a tiny number in terms of the assets of the United States of America. It's really easy for the government to come up with $2 trillion. Okay, if it had to, if it had to secure the cash and buy gold and give everybody who had cash gold bars, it could do it really easily. No problem. $2 trillion, no problem. It can buy $2 trillion worth of gold. All right. So the money is backed. It's real. It's solid cash. It's a solid commodity because it has been restricted. All the countries that went bankrupt because, yeah, they just kept doing this cash thing. They would just say to the bank, buy me an elephant. Buy me a water balloon. Buy me some kind of bullshit, okay? And I'll just put the cash in your account. And so they just kept putting more and more cash into the economy. All right, so the current Federal Reserve makes no sense. So in 2010, they broke FDIC insurance. So I'll first explain real quick. They broke FDIC insurance because they didn't, they weren't insuring just assets in the bank, okay, cash that people put in the bank. They started insuring crap, junk bonds. So they took $7 or $8 trillion worth of junk bonds that were now junk, officially. Okay, they were shitty bonds, and they were turned into complete shit. You know, rotten, festering, maggot-covered shit. And so a bunch of rich people were going to go broke, and they couldn't let that happen. Trillions of dollars worth of rich people brokenness. So it would be a huge upheaval in the economy because a bunch of rich people were going to be poor people. And so the government came in and said, we'll just insure the junky stocks so they can stay on the market. So if I pretend, okay, I just tell you that, you know, the dead sheep are really live sheep. I promise, if you ever really need one, I'll give you a live sheep. But we all know that all the sheep are dead. Right? I'm just guaranteeing that, okay, I can buy you a real sheep if you need one. All right? But yeah, all your sheep are dead. So it's dead sheep. It's not value. It's burned down houses. So they basically said a bunch of burned down houses were still real houses. And so people would own it, you know, the deed, because the government was guaranteeing that the house that burned down didn't burn down. It's still there. And I'll give you $100,000 for it. So whatever it says on it, I'll give you, guarantee it. So the government guaranteed junk. So it would stay in the market, okay, and those people would stay rich. So that's all they did it for. So $7 trillion. They have a fund of $100 billion, right? There's no way $100 billion is going to pay $7 trillion, so it's going to go bankrupt really quick. It's an insurance company that has no capacity to show up in Florida or something after the hurricane and pay out the cash. It doesn't have it. So it can't, it's not insurance. It won't work. It can't happen. So in a crisis, it's not going to have the funds. It won't be able to guarantee people's assets. And the only way it could possibly guarantee them is it would have to print the cash, right? Print the cash and put it in the reserve accounts of the bank so people could cash the checks. So it would have to print $7 trillion. Do you understand? There's only $2 trillion in circulation. If you print $7 trillion, obviously, the dollar isn't worth anything anymore, and a loaf of bread is going to cost, you know, $10 or $25, okay? So you were not going to get back, so your guarantee, your FDIC insurance means you're insured to get back money that won't be worth anything. So what good is it? It's not worth anything. It's not good for anything. Giving me money that's not worth anything doesn't mean anything. It's not insurance. So it's dead, all right? And what they did, the gimmick they did to the Fed, as I've explained, is they just tell the banks to go out and buy a bond, a U.S. bond, and we'll consider the U.S. bond cash. And then just put it back, you know, we'll put it in your vault and we'll count it, okay, as a real asset. But technically it's not really an asset, okay, so never spend that money. So the Federal Reserve went from, as the mystic even says in this video, it went from, say, $500 billion in what total, if you add up all the accounts of the banks, they had $500 billion in their vaults. And it went to $8 trillion. Okay, so since 2010, it went from $500 billion to $8 trillion. Now, if you look at the line for the Fed from like 1930 to, you know, 1980 or 90, right? So for 60 years, the line barely creeped up. Barely. I mean, it went from like $50 billion to $150 billion. I mean, tiny little increase. Tiny little. And then it shot up like that, right? Okay, so that's the the gimmick. So in 2010, another bailout of the system was to inflate stock prices because the markets were crashing, so they needed to get money into the markets, so they bought commodities off the market. So they essentially bought all the U.S. bonds, and so everybody was holding a U.S. bond got paid, okay, cash for their bond, all right? And so they... So there's paintings on the market. Consider stocks and all this other stuff, commodities, as just paintings. And so you can sort of understand what they did was they gave a bidder, an owner, cash. All right. So they put more cash in the audience and they took a painting off. So you can see now there's more cash for the bidders and less things for the bidders to buy. And you can understand, of course, what's going to happen. Of course, these things are going to go up in value because there's more cash available to buy and there's fewer things to buy. So the bonds are now in the Fed, okay, owned by the Fed. They're off the market. Now, to put this $8 trillion, okay, to pay back, this is essentially just loaning. The government is borrowing money by buying its own bonds, its own debt, all right? And it doesn't buy it with real digits. So now the Federal Reserve accounts all say they have these huge amounts of money in them. Okay, $7 trillion. But the bank's real assets are still down here at $100 billion. So this is the real bank accounts of the bank. This is just the bonds. So this is just the bonds the U.S. government is calling a real asset. So all of this doesn't count at all. It has nothing to do with the banks. The banks can't lend this. They can't use this because then it would be printed cash. So this can never leave the Federal Reserve. This is the only part that can leave the Federal Reserve is the little $100 billion. So the $100 billion can go in and out of the Federal Reserve based on how much money the banks lend. This can never go anywhere, all of this. Okay. And if the U.S. government ever tries to get rid of this debt, okay, and put it back on the market, you can see what happens. The cash comes out of the bidding and a commodity goes back on the market. So it's exactly the opposite of what you want to do to the stock market, is put more commodities on the market and have less cash in the hands of the bidders. So that's the disaster. See, they have to collect taxes to create to put the bond back on. You know, So that's the problem. You're taxing the bidders to pay to buy the bond out of the reserve. All right. So obviously it won't work. You know, crash the markets. So they inflated the markets, but they can't re-deflate them without essentially crashing them. All right. So you'll never see this money ever get cashed out until the depression hits. So until the crisis hits, all of this fake money is just going to remain fake money. And it's fake in the sense, too, that it inflated the wealth of all these people bidding on the paintings. It makes them think they're richer and richer because all the commodity prices went up. The wheat price, the corn price, all the commodities have to go up commensurate to all this inflation. So this part of the system is still working. And it's not the part you get to see. But this is what used to... This is how much the reserve accounts changed told the economists how the economy was doing. So the more money that was in the vaults of the banks, right, the higher their reserve numbers, that meant they weren't lending money. So that meant that the economy was kind of grinding because there was nothing the banks could feel confident about lending money for. So nobody was showing up with a good job or a good salary to pay a good mortgage and all that kind of stuff. Everybody was too poor and the value of the crap was too inflated. So nobody wants to make a loan, because they're not going to make money on it. It's just going to be a disaster. So this was sort of an indicator of how things are going. So the lower the reserves, that means the more loans the banks are making because there's more opportunity to make money because people's salaries are going up and their job security is going up and their ability to pay is going up and the value of the houses is going up. So when that's happening, the banks are pretty confident. They loan out all they can. They go to full capacity loaning. All right, so the reserve numbers used to tell you how hot the economy was, and the Federal Reserve would just change the interest rate when things were low. You know, when things are slow, they would say, okay, we need more loans, so we're going to change the interest rate from, you know, requiring you to pay 6%, we're going to change it to 5% so people make more attempts to get a loan, and the banks can, you know, they can, more loans are, they're capable of making more loans because the percentage rate is more payable. Okay. So that's, there's a huge racket here. Now, that's the A and the B. So the A is the destruction of the FDIC insurance. The B is the destruction of the concept of the Federal Reserve. And the C is something that's been going on from the very beginning that is the real downfall of the system. So the system looks pretty, it's pretty well engineered, frankly. They did a pretty good job. This Federal Reserve thing was a good idea. This, you know, this is all digital. You know, they can, computers do all the switching. It's really sensible. It makes a lot of sense. But they never fix the real flaw, which is buying on margin. That is, loaning more than one loan on the same capital. And so that's the part I'll draw, or attempt to. But that's the part, that's the cheat that the rich people play. That's how the rich people game the system. All right. And put us all in jeopardy. The economy is put in jeopardy by their behavior. Okay, because we can't do it. Now, I'm not saying that the common man wouldn't do the cheating, wouldn't do the same thing if they could, but they really can't, realistically. All right, I'd be back. All right, so what makes a mess out of the system is this. I've explained this in one of the other videos, too, but let's just do the concept simple. So let's do the simple version. You're a farmer, and you have a silo of wheat. Very good year, you got a full silo of wheat. The fact is, though, as you know, it was really good weather for growing wheat, and all the other farmers also have a silo full of wheat, and so you know your wheat price isn't going up. So you own this whole big silo of wheat, but you know it's not really has, yeah. You're not gonna make any money on it. You're just gonna break even. But you also know, because the weather was good for wheat, it was really shitty for corn, and you know all the old corn farmers had a real hard time. They only got half silos. So you know corn is the thing to own, okay? So what you do is you basically go to the bank and you say, look, you know, I own this silo of wheat. It's worth $1 million, you know, blah, 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 blah. Give me a loan. The bank says, fine, we'll give you a loan. All right, so then you take the $1 million and you buy yourself $1 million worth of corn, but you know it's going up. Okay, so now you own an asset. Really, you own two, right? This deed, okay, went to the bank's ownership, but frankly, it's yours to buy back anytime you want. You just have to give them back their money and you get back your wheat. And now you own corn, too. So you've capitalized, okay, on your ownership, and you bought corn. But let's say that you know that, because the corn prices went up, the pig prices went way up, as you got to feed the pigs and blah, 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 blah. So I know a guy owns a, you know, I hate to use that example, but he owns a bunch of little oinkers. And so then you say, well, I'm going to put my corn in the bank, okay, and get my $1 million, and I'm going to buy some pigs. So now you have a deed for corn, you know, you have the deed from your wheat, okay, that's in the bank. You have your deed for the corn, that's in the bank, okay, and now you own pigs. And you have that deed out here. So you still own that deed. So you still have your equity, but, you know, you're really in trouble if the wheat goes way down and the corn goes way down in terms of their value, or the bank's in trouble, right? One of the two of you are in big trouble, because either the bank has collateral that's not worth anything, or you have obligation to pay a loan you can't pay. So you would undo it the same way you did it, but this is what the banksters are doing, right? Is they buy a U.S. bond, put it in the bank, get the cash back, buy another U.S. bond, okay? Put it in the bank, get the cash back. They just keep doing this, okay, because they can. They do it over and over. So this is what drove the people to jump out windows in the stock market crash. Is there were people who did this. They bought more and more stuff with the same cash over and over again. Okay, so they kept using the same value, the same piece of wealth, and they just kept remortgaging it. So they mortgaged 17 houses, you know. And the problem was is the price of houses dropped and they couldn't sell a house to put the money back in the bank to buy the deed from the other house or to buy da 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 da, and they couldn't pay the loans. And so That's the failure of margin. So this is where these people were, you know, one person could end up $1 billion in debt. You know, they were making $50 million a year because their purchases were going way up in value more than they went down in value. But as soon as their purchases go more down in value than up in value, they start to lose a lot of money. So the rich people, they all did this. But the ones that were really rich could survive it because they knew the value of all this stuff was going to go back up eventually. So they could hold on. But the people who didn't have any reserve, so to speak, didn't own anything else except this one purchase. They had no hope of paying anything back because they had no reserves. They had no capital. Okay, their only capital was one silo of wheat. And that value got destroyed, so they have nothing. But this is what creates all the liability, is the fact that you have individuals who the bomb can blow up in a spectacular way. They don't go bankrupt in some little way. They go bankrupt in a spectacular way where a huge, giant liability is unpayable. All right, and so that's where lots of other people aren't going to have. Are going to be affected because this guy can't pay any bills, he can't pay any of the obligations, and a lot of people lose money by lending him money. So that's the liability in the system, and that's what's buying stock now. It's a bunch of people. So, you know, maybe it's 50% or maybe it's 70% of the loans that the banks are making are loans to these kind of people. These are the kind of loans they're making. Okay, these ones that are the same capital keeps getting collateralized. The same legitimate ownership is used more than once, essentially. I mean, it's not much different than somebody writing up a fake deed, just going to different banks with it, and putting the same house in all the banks and getting a mortgage on the same house. It's a little different, but it's not much different. And it's obviously legal, and the other thing isn't legal. But the danger is this is what creates all the liability, because this is all the fake notion of wealth and purchasing power. These are all bids on the market. So every time the guy does this, he's bidding up the market, right? Every time he shows up at the auction and keeps spending the same $1 million, he shows up every day. And he keeps spending essentially the same $1 million, and he keeps acquiring stuff in the auction. But he can't really pay for it. He can't pay for what he's actually bought. And the only way he could pay for it is it has to all keep going up in value. If any of the stuff he bought goes down in value, he can't get his money back, because if he gets it out of the bank, he can't sell it for the price he paid for it. He can't get the $1 million for it anymore because it's only worth $50,000. And so now his equity is gone and he can't buy anything else out of the bank because he doesn't have the $1 million anymore. So it's this crap that ruins the system. And obviously, like I said, that's why the rich have a huge advantage, because they can take their ownership, okay, of a building or anything, and they can collateralize it anytime they want and capitalize it. That means they can turn it into capital, cash to spend. So they can just keep using the banks as a source of transaction capital, where common people can't. But obviously, me or you, if we owned a house, let's say you own your house, you could put a mortgage on your house and take the cash and buy stock, and you could be pretty assured that in the next 3 years, because that's what it's been doing over time, that you're kind of guaranteed that you're going to get 30%, okay, increase in the value of what you bought on the markets. And you're only going to pay, say, 4 or 5%. Interest on the loan. So you're going to have a net, that'll be 15 total. So you're going to have a net profit of 15%. Okay, so you'll be making an income off the value of your assets, your capital, your capitalizable wealth. But obviously people are very insecure about putting their house in jeopardy, so they don't do it too much. But right now, everybody who owns a house, everybody who's buying a house, doesn't really buy a house. They're just buying, a loan. And, they're not even close to owning any of it. And so that's what's inflated the housing market, is the banks are giving money to a bunch of people that really don't own any of the house, and the bank is really owns all of it, and they haven't collected much out of it yet. So if things take a downturn and people get unemployed, the banks are going to be stuck with a lot of houses that they're going to have to sell, and there's not going to be buyers. So that's the whole problem, right? You always have to see how many buyers there are for something you own, and that's what's going to decide what the thing you own is worth. And if there's no buyers, you're going to lose money, you know. But the system isn't that complicated. It is barter. It's always been barter. It's still barter. And the difference is the cash isn't the problem. The money isn't the problem. The lending is the problem. Okay? And the idea of people borrowing money on the same capital is the problem. That's the one that creates the huge liability, the gigantic bankruptcy that bankrupts everyone else. So if a bank goes bad, it's not going to go bad in, well, we lost, you know, $56, we're $66 overdrawn on our checking account. They're not going to be $56 overdrawn. They're going to be $7 trillion overdrawn. And they won't be able to pay anybody who has a claim on that $7 trillion. All the people who are entitled to that $7 trillion are not going to get their money. So the failure is going to be catastrophic. So one rich person goes bankrupt, and they're going to make a whole bunch of others go bankrupt because they're going to go super bankrupt. It's going to be a huge amount of fake wealth, you know, real ownership that wasn't real, all these fake bidders on the auction. And now all the fake bidders are going to be out of the auction. All these bidders are going to disappear from the auction. And so the prices go way down. And that means there's even less bidders now because all these people got wiped out because the prices are going down. And because these prices went down, these bidders went down, it's going to go even further down. So that's the payback for the fake inflated, oh, I'm rich, I'm rich, I'm rich. I'm rich because I used the same money to buy a bunch of assets I don't really own. And Trump is the perfect example of this horse shit. Trump claims to be a billionaire. He isn't. Okay, he owns a bunch of debt. The stuff he owns, he doesn't really own it. His name is on it, but the deed is in somebody else's vault. And all he's done is this. All right, that's enough. And ironically, he's done it so badly that if he would have just kept the original silo of wheat, he would have been richer. That's the joke of it. He's so bad at this that he would have been richer if he just kept his silo of wheat. Hilarious. All right, anyway, so enough of a video. It's longer than I thought. You can't really explain it simply, but everything the mystic says here is just horseshit. He's just an idiot, apparently. So he wants me to call him an idiot because he's calling everybody who disagrees with him an idiot. So let's just play a couple of these clips and get out of here. Yeah, sorry. Why isn't it visible? How strange. Well, I guess I have to get rid of the camera. And then it'll be visible. Okay. So.
Made with bank digits. So we won't bother with where bank digits come and go from, but you should know by now that they're lent into existence, obviously.
Right. They're lent into existence under regulation. The banks are regulated. They can't even acquire the funds to do it. They can't get the money, the cash from the Federal Reserve. They couldn't write the check if they don't have it in the reserve account. It's impossible. Because then when it goes to get cashed in the Federal Reserve, they write their check, okay, to lend somebody some money. Well, when the other bank says, you know, this is a check from that bank, take the money from their account, put it in my account. Well, if there's no money in the reserve account, they can't cash the check. So they obviously cannot possibly get the cash without asking the Federal Reserve for it, essentially. They have to have the permission of the Federal Reserve to lend money. They can't just make it up. That's nonsense. what the Federal Reserve counts as reserve capital. Like I said, it's counting bonds now as reserve capital. It could say a house is reserve capital. It could say lots of things are reserve capital, and then the reserves of the bank goes way up. But it really doesn't do that yet. So if you're getting money for a house loan, the Fed is watching. So that's just nonsense. So he just tried to, you know, say something. It's just nonsense. All right, well, so go to 910, where he apparently says something else stupid. I mean, to say we won't bother with where the money comes from, that's the whole point. There's only $2 trillion in cash available. It has to circulate and move. They have to go out and buy the cash, so to speak, to give it to somebody. They have to sell something on the market to get the cash to give it to somebody else.
For hundreds of years, because it's capable of breathing with the...
That's the old Federal Reserve. So again, so he's so ironic because he basically says here that the reserve accounts are a monitor of the activity in the economy. Well, they're obviously not a monitor anymore because now they're just monitoring how much money the government's borrowing through the Federal Reserve system. So we don't know what the real reserve accounts of the banks are without all the bond purchases. What's the real reserve accounts? So the real reserves of the banks, I would venture a guess that their real reserves are at the lowest point they've been, that they're very low because they are fully extended in terms of the loans they're issuing. That's why housing prices have gone so high. It's because they're loaning as much money as they can right now.
The mood of the country. If the country is ebullient, very happy, it will expand by creating more money.
Okay, so that's the bullshit. It expanded completely artificially because the U.S. government told the banks to buy stuff and the money was never paid for the stuff that was bought. That's the fact of it. And it was just put in the reserve accounts as, you know, fake reserves. I'll pay you on Thursday, you know, kind of reserves. It's just saying that the government's basically saying to the banks, look, I'll pay you when I have to, but I won't pay you any day before then. So until you need the money, I'm not paying for anything. And that's as simple as it was. And so it's just... They just made a one-time transaction, so the money isn't in the economy. It doesn't keep circulating because it was never cash money. It was just reserves manipulated. So it never went into the actual economy, and it wouldn't be till the banks actually spent that $7 trillion and $8 trillion in the reserve accounts that it would actually go into the economy. And it'll never spend it because the government already has made the deal that you never can spend the money. It's not your money, banks. It's not really the bank's money. It's just the bank's obligation. But the government's the one really holding the, you know, I have to pay. It's money the government owes the banks. The $7 trillion in the reserve accounts is not the money the banks own. It's the debt the government has created. It's just a way of hiding debt. Okay, instead of issuing a bond, you buy a bond. It's an ironic thing to do. The government has bought its own debt. All right. So, you're the one clueless and stupid.
Credit into that economy. If the economy is dull and down, it will shrink.
It doesn't shrink it. It encourages the banks to lend more. It lowers the interest rate, making it possible for more money to go out to borrowers. It increases the lending activity. The reserve accounts are not, the government doesn't say the reserves are $6 million. It doesn't put money in the reserve accounts for no reason. It puts them in through direct purchases. It buys stuff, okay, off the market. That's how it stimulates the economy. It buys stuff. It shows up at the auction and does the fake bidding up, okay? That's all what the government did. The government showed up at the auction and did $7 trillion worth of inflating of the commodity prices. So the real price would have gone down for the stocks and for oil and for wheat and for everything. All the prices would have gone down, but the government showed up to save the day, to save the auction, and drive the prices way up by bidding where no one else would have bid.
Giving out loans, but taking in the loans and cutting down the amount that's in that total layer of bank digits, which is basically all.
Okay, so the Federal Reserve doesn't control those numbers at all, and it's controlled by two things. How much the banks lend changes their little tiny part of it. You know, the 10% that's the bank's money changes based on how much the banks loan, and the big part just changes based on how much the government buys. You know, whether it sells some of the crap it's bought off the market, or whether it buys more crap off the market. And right now, for the last 10, 12 years, they just keep buying stuff. They're not selling. Okay, they do a little tiny sale, then they buy some more, and then they sell it. You know, all going up. $4 trillion 8 years ago, $8 trillion now. Okay, that kind of thing is happening. So since 2010, $7 or $8 trillion worth of bubble bidding on commodities, fake bids, fake money, inflating prices of commodities to keep the rich rich for no other reason than to keep the rich from becoming poor. That's it. To stop them from going bankrupt with their bad purchases. All right. So yeah, that's enough. Now, I'm satisfied. So he's like I said, watch his video. It's all just drivel. It's all just baby talk. Pretending that all this is fake numbers. They just make up these digits. Bullshit. It's all traceable. It's all on pieces of paper with the Securities and Exchange Commission. It's there. It's shenanigans. Don't get me wrong. There's plenty of shenanigans. There's plenty of this margin bullshit. There's plenty of this hedges and bullshit. Okay, but the system isn't bullshit. The system had some integrity. They've just manipulated and broken it. And again, like I said, the whole banking system works if you don't let the asshole re-commoditize the same, you know, recapitalize the same initial equity. As long as you don't let this some asshole to keep showing up every day at the auction, okay, you know, to buy with the same dollar bill over and over again, the system works. But if you're going to let somebody do the margin thing, then you've opened the door to disaster. All right. So, till the next time and such, and so forth and whatnot. Yeah, this is how you end. Okay. So, this has been a DoNotGod.com video presentation. Google's really super evil, super rich, super evil, playing super evil games. Destroying anything called a free internet and a open internet. It's closed. Google censors it. It controls it. Manipulates it any way it, as a capitalist, wishes to. It's completely monopolized and controlling our free speech and our free access. It's just so goddamn evil.